right. Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show, as always. You can join us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. Text us at that same number. My guest is Professor Bob Harvey, all the way from Charlotte, North Carolina. You know, Professor Harvey, people ask why I push back so much on this conservative MAGA movement, Make America Great Again. And here's another one of those examples why this is so important, especially being a person of color. It's almost as if in this country, after all of these decades, we're still fighting to get equal rights in this country. We're Americans just like anybody else, and yet we are still looked at in a in something other than Americans. Let me ask you this, Professor Harvey. I know you're aware of it. This Supreme Court is going to be taking on affirmative action, and the oral arguments of a pair of cases could end the use of affirmative action in higher education. You think about Thurgood Marshall, the first black Supreme Court justice, Professor Harvey, and that time that our parents and others and the fight and all of the things that went on to make it possible for you and I to go to school. And here today, we're on the precipice of affirmative action being taken away, and yet that's not even a major discussion. So this is a fight that many white people aren't aware of, that and even many black people aren't aware of, because people say it's been enough time now, and that injustice has been righted. You say what to that?
Well, that was the argument that was used, if you remember, when they dismantled Section 3 of the Voting Rights Act of 1965, when they argued that a few years ago, and the court said that, you know, one of the Supreme Court justices, I think it may have been Scalise or one of the others who said that they don't think that racism, and Clarence Thomas concurred with it, that racism no longer exists. So therefore, that part is not necessary. When nothing is further from the truth, but remember what we were talking about before you went to commercial, that one of the ways that oppressors oftentimes fool people is if they see that they're getting too close to discovering the truth, they blame them for it.
Right.
And while they're busy defending, they go on and they do it. What has made this more dangerous now is that with the arrival of a person like Donald Trump, an enabler of violence and hatred and divisiveness, he comes along and makes it comfortable for them to do it out in the open. They don't have to be clandestine with it anymore. Just bring it out in the open. And he has emboldened a portion of white America, about a third of it, of white America, that openly realizes that the only way they're going to see the light of day socially, economically, or politically, and culturally, is if they can somehow gain control and manipulate and create a society that will make them feel that their whiteness matters. They feel left behind. I understand that. But they are no further left behind than black, Latinos, Native Americans, Asian Americans. We've all been left behind in that same stew pot, but they can't see it. And as I said before on your program, Earl, the American middle class, access to the American middle class, ways to get there, is dying. It's drying up. And fewer and fewer of them see that. And so I understand when veterans come home, there are no great jobs necessarily to make them feel a little better about what they've gone through. There's nothing there. There's nothing but fighting and infighting, and we always talk about we want to honor the veterans. But nobody's talking about what we're doing to them while they're overseas fighting. Could you imagine them overseas serving this country, being shot in Afghanistan and other places, and at the same time they turn on the damn television and they see those bastards, treasonous bastards, storming the nation's capital on January 6th. You know, what are they thinking?
Well,
what does it bring them back home to?
Well, people claim that those were patriots, Professor Harvey.
Well, that's my whole point. They try to make it appear that way, but that's not what they are. That's not what they are. They are treasonous bastards who are trying to pimp off of history, and they're ignorant of history to try to do that. And you mentioned something just before we went to the break about this whole thing about this race replacement theory. If you realize there's been a process they've gone through. They've gone from critical race theory. If you remember just a few months ago, that's all Tucker Carlson and the people on Fox News talked about. Critical race theory. Until they found out what it really was. And then they finally did some research and read, and then realized that it had nothing to do with, Black history was an outshot of it, but it was nothing about, trying to ignore and denounce white history. Critical race theory was something that was started by a group of black scholars to go after, black and white liberals of the civil rights movement, saying that you were going the wrong way. You worried about the civil rights. Y'all didn't even think about the idea of politics. So they were really slandering them, and so they took that and made it seem like they're trying to go after and black the history of white America. It's just the opposite. And then they went from, when that finally got explained to them by probably some black conservative scholars, at Stanford and other places, then they went around there and they decided to go with this idea of race replacement theory. They wanted that for a while. And they were taking it off of an offshot of that march in Charlottesville, a few years ago, that Jews will not replace us.
Right.
So they played on that. And now they're on the woke theory. The woke theory is a theoretical idea of people, using certain characteristics to engage in critical thinking. It's all about ways of engaging in critical thinking.
So Professor Harvey.
And so now they're all on woke.
Professor Harvey, hold that thought. Let's go to the phone lines and Cassandra from Madison. Hey, good morning to you, Cassandra. Thank you very much for the call. You say what?
Thanks for taking my call, and I am enjoying listening to Dr. Harvey. Dr. Harvey, I have a proposition for you to consider. The Democratic Party has been trying to force this people of color or this rainbow coalition. And I think we are seeing recently that it might be an illusion. There is a very deep anti-black sentiment in the Latino community. And I'm not quite sure at this time that we can form a truly effective coalition with Latinos at this time. Now, I'm not saying it can't ever happen. Also, the Democratic Party has been trying to form this multiracial coalition with low-income whites. That is not happening because they believe that their whiteness provides them a social currency. So, my proposition is this. Isn't it about time that we as African Americans start to consider our own interests? And by our own interest, what that means is that we need to advance policies that will bring a quality of life for us. And if we cannot, then it's time for us to suggest abolishing programs and departments that primarily benefit white and perhaps even Latino Americans. I'll give you a perfectly good example. The USDA is embroiled in a lawsuit over black farmers having access to funding. Now, Why not put pressure on our black political leaders and tell them you will significantly revise or modify the USDA if black farmers do not have access to that funding, then consider abolishing the USDA. Then no one is going to have access to that funding. There is a very slim majority, even if we were to maintain the House, if black leaders were pressured not to fund the USDA unless black farmers also receive equitable funding, the many whites who are screaming and yelling about reverse discrimination over programs that will hurt them, they will certainly reconsider, because they're going to actually begin to lose something. Here in Wisconsin, Wisconsin is 70% rural. The rural counties in the state, they would not be economically viable without funding from Milwaukee and Madison, the urban centers. Why not push for equitable funding and tell the rural counties, whatever funding that you want, you are going to have to receive more funding from your people. You cannot no longer be a welfare county. So there are things that we can do. We have leverage, but I feel that our black political leaders, they're failing us, and they're not willing to do it. And I will land my plane there, and I am looking forward to hearing what you have to say.
Hey, Cassandra, thank you very much for the call. Professor Harvey, we got to go to a break. Others on the lines, okay, will come to you after the break. Hang on. Professor Bob Harvey is my guest. 844-967-2789 is the number. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. You text us at that same number. You know, my guest is Professor Bob Harvey, and I enjoy Professor Harvey so much. He's such a learned man, but his passion rises to the top. Professor Harvey, you want to respond to what Cassandra was saying earlier?
A lot, but the things that I have to look at, and when I look at, you know, anytime you want to do a battle, you have to look at the strength on the other side and all the opposition that's involved in it. It's not saying you don't do anything, but it's saying that you have to think critically and smartly when you do it. Now, three of the things that I'm going to look at that she addressed, that she talked about, because she talked about a lot of things, but one of them is, of course, she said, talk about abolishing a department. There are probably about 44 members of the Congressional Black Caucus, and not all of them agree on everything. But the bottom line is that even if those 44 voted as a block, and they could put pressure and do some leverage,
still be
they're going to be outnumbered.
Right.
You know, you got 438 members of the United States Congress, and that's in the House. And you got 100 members in the Senate. And I'm trying to remember, I think you got maybe two or three black senators. Many of them are part of the Black Caucus. So the big issue is if you're going to go after the USDA, you know, there are things that you have to understand what it's going to take to do that. Now, many of those black elected officials are in safe districts. That's why you don't see them pressured as much. They're in safe districts. They're in districts that are not going to create, you know, where they don't have to raise a whole lot of sand. Just show up at a couple of fundraisers and speak a little bit at a couple of community organizations, and they're going to get voters in. And that voter turnout is as high as in some areas. So, but we have to push for the enthusiasm of the people. That means the young folk. The black women have always shown up, so she is, Ms. Sanders, she's in good company there. Her group is well represented, probably one of the best represented percentage-wise of the part of the population to any other to any other age group in the African-American community. But black folk, we got to get out there and vote. And we got to get politically active, and not just at every time for the presidency or for the federal government with the Congress. We've got to do it at the city, county, and state legislative body, because that's where the battle is being won and lost. Not in Washington. It's won and lost down here, because if you have to go after the USDA, keep in mind that the money comes through them, and then it goes down into the states, where the states divvy out that money under the auspices and jurisdiction of the federal government. So you need to make sure that you get putting pressure on the state as well. If you want to dismantle the one in Washington, then you better be prepared to go after the one at the state capital as well. So just understand what kind of battle you're getting yourself into. Another area that you want to look at in terms of the Latino relationship, keep in mind that the Latino population is extremely diverse, probably the most diverse in this country, including dealing with other European ethnic groups. And the reason why I make that qualification of European ethnic groups, Spain and Portugal are European countries. The first people to introduce slavery into the Western Hemisphere from Europe didn't come from England or France or the Netherlands. It came from Spain and Portugal. And so the grandparents of slavery in the New World, no matter which one is male, which one is female, I don't know. But from those two countries on the Iberian Peninsula, they're the ones that introduced the institution of the Atlantic slave trade, where millions of our people were sold and destroyed. And so if you're going to start looking at blaming them like you do the English, I understand that. There's a historical connection for it. But I also understand that they're extremely diverse. Of the 13 countries that you have in South America, only one of them, and that's the country of, well, you got the Grenadines, but only one of the major countries there is, of course, Brazil, which is the largest country and has the largest black population outside of Africa. So you got to understand it's even larger than one of the United States. So what you've got to understand is the geography of when you start talking about Latinos, there are 12 countries in South America that are of Spanish descent. The other is Portugal, which is a Latin country, by the way, because of their language connection. But you got to also realize how they're going to react. Many of them people come here to the United States, they don't see themselves. They see themselves sometimes as white. Just like you have some black people who live in Louisiana and other places where they've done a lot of racial mixing through miscegenation that see themselves as white a lot of times. If they can pass for it, they're going to do it. That was covered in a book written by a guy named Frank Tonnenbaum entitled Slave and Citizen, where he showed that racial caste system. You know, and in South America and what you call Central America, those six countries that make up Central America. And then, of course, you got Mexico. Remember, at one time, a third of the United States of America was under Latin control. And so you have to understand, before you can attack or go after anything, understand history. That's why I said earlier, if you were listening, that Florida and Texas should be blue, should have been blue a long time ago. They were when Johnson was there. But then all of a sudden, now they're becoming red as hell. So we've got to figure out why. Right now, 56% of Latino people in Florida support DeSantis. That's insane. Especially when he's packing people on planes and buses, as immigrants coming in from Latin American countries and flying up to other places. Not only that, but about 39%, 33% of Latino people voted for Donald Trump. 37% of white Latino men and 32% of Latino women.
So, Professor, you got to hold that thought. We've got to go to a break. We'll be right back.
Hold on. Say what you just said, but louder.
What?
Just say it one more time. I just want to be sure.
I just need you to speak up a little bit. You know what I mean? Just a little bit. Because I just want to be clear.
Because you talk a good game with your indoor voice, and it don't mean a lot to me. Just letting you know. You're trying to steal your show.
Wait. You just did again now.
All right. Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. Text us at that same number. My guest is Professor Bob Harvey, all the way from Charlotte, North Carolina. You know, Professor Harvey, one of the reasons why it's so important to have you and your truth over these airways is right now, as we are a week or so outside of the election, 2 weeks outside or less outside of the 2022 midterm elections, in the state of Wisconsin, there is clearly a contrast with who, you know, our governor and is going to be, and who United States Senator is going to be. And here's what many people don't want to know. The decision on who that's going to be is going to be in the city of Milwaukee. Milwaukee and black people coming out to vote will determine who our United States Senator is going to be and who the governor of the state of Wisconsin is going to be. And that's why it's, and you could say that probably, Professor Harvey, in other cities as states as well. And that's why there's been such a push to deny access to these very people who have been marginalized and treated in the manner that we have been. And so these people are aware that if we do everything within our power to continue to disenfranchise black people and poor people, Professor Harvey, this is America. America is for all people, and it's not just for some. And we have to make sure that it stays that way, because there are people now who are mobilized and doing everything within their power to make sure that we, the poor, the black citizens of this nation, I thought we fought this fight before, Professor Harvey. I thought this battle, and many of us thought this battle was won. I don't think many of us ever thought that we would be fighting it again.
1895, Frederick, just before his death, Frederick Douglass was approached by some very upset, you know, black, prestigious black folk at the time about the way things were going, because they could see the Reconstruction era declining. In fact, the federal government, the United States government, the Republican Party, fall, just to be truthful about it, in 1876, made a compromise with, in order to get Rutherford B. Hayes as the 19th president of the United States. And they were asked, Frederick Douglass, about what should we abandon the Republican Party? And as Ms. Sanders was suggesting, maybe look somewhere else. And Frederick Douglass looked at him and said, you know, listen, as far as things are concerned right now, with the way we are in our precarious situation in this nation's history at this time, we remember that the Republican Party is the ship, and all this is the sea. And if we abandon it, we're going to drown. And, of course, that's a little overly dramatic, But the bottom line is that I see the same thing right now about the Democratic Party. If the, you know, right now, if you want to come up with something else, because I noticed Ms. Sanders was openly, you know, going after the Democratic Party. Yes, it is true that they have a history of failing, but over the last 40 to 50 years, the Democratic Party has been the one party that has fought, not on all occasions, but in some occasions, to at least ensure that we were empowered and enfranchised, and it gives us a voice. And if we're to learn anything from abandoning, trying to go it alone against the established parties, think about the battle that Fannie Lou Hamer went through, in 1964, when, you know, she was out there pushing, you know, with her separate party. And they finally had to make an agreement to allow at least two blacks to sit in one delegation so that Johnson could get the nomination. And Johnson went on in 65 to pass the Voting Rights Act. So we have got to understand when and how to pick our fights, but we must also understand the history. I mean, if you listen to some of the words of the Black National Anthem, Stoner the Road That We've Tread, you know, we've gone through a lot of trials and tribulations, and we're going to go ahead and recreate some of those trips. But we can never get tired because of what the ultimate objective is, and that is empowerment. Empowerment, and remember, during the Reconstruction era, from 1869 to really 1901, there were 21 blacks that served in the United States Congress. They were all from the South, and they were all Republicans. Today, it's just the opposite. So we have found that any time a party gives us an opening, we take it. And we follow our course until this, because it's going to be disrupted again, because I can tell you that a whole lot of white Democrats don't totally believe in the Democratic platform. They would love to be down there groveling in the rural areas for some of them folks. Remember, that's where a lot of the seeds of the Democratic Party came from. So I'm not surprised when I don't see the Democrats wholeheartedly embracing anything. But what's pushed them has been groups like the Black Caucus. It has been groups like, you know, black people out there in the community pushing them. And one of the things that I wanted to say, you know, when you were looking at a similarity between Charlotte, between North Carolina and Wisconsin, they're both about the same color, you know, purple colored states. You know, and Wisconsin, Donald Trump barely won Wisconsin, and Donald Trump barely lost Wisconsin, and he barely won North Carolina, barely won. And right now, Beasley is running a hell of a campaign right now, against her competitor. She's going to lose, but I think she's going to lose in the same way that Barnes may lose in Wisconsin. You got to understand the mindset, and this is what we come down to. And she did, Ms. Sanders did explain adroitly about what's going on now in the minds of many poor whites. Many of them are never going to see themselves voting for, you know, a black man and having a white woman represent the state of Wisconsin any more than they're going to see themselves putting a black woman that's as articulate as Beasley is. She's sharper and more dynamic than the candidate that she's running against, but they're just not going to do it.
Well, Professor Harvey, some may push back against you and said, yeah, but we voted for Barack Obama.
Yes, but Barack Obama was an exceptional individual that could run rings around any of the last eight presidents, including Reagan, run circles around him, intellectually in any other way. Now, history will never, ever say it because they can't. They can't. You know, and Great Britain is about to get a taste of that right now. With their new prime minister. They replaced the one that they had for 44 days. You know, race is something that's not just delegated to the United States, but it's what makes the United States stand out. It's supposed to be this beacon of equality for everyone.
Right.
And Obama comes in, and I keep telling people, what people don't seem to understand is Obama is half white. He was brought up in a white world. And yet, despite all of that, most white folks still didn't accept him. They still did not accept him. And when John Boehner and Mitch McConnell knew what they had the moment Obama came in, when they looked around and John Boehner said, you know, this is a gift to us because we're going to gain back the House and the Senate, and they did. They took the House back in 2010, and in 2015 they took back the Senate. And they gave Barack Obama hell for that for 6 years of his 8 years. But the majority of the American people voted for him. So the Republicans found a formula. They found it started with Newt Gingrich in 95. But they perfected it by the time they got to dealing with Obama. We don't have to have control of all the branches. We can raise enough hell where we are. What did Mitch McConnell do? He decided that he was going to add another layer to it and fill the courts with conservative justices. And that was going to be his legacy. And so what they did to Obama is what they're doing to us every day. They play the race card. They use the Southern strategy because they learned one thing when they saw them numbers that came out in 2008 and it came out especially in 2012. That's what angered white America, the fact that the majority of white America voted against Obama in 2008 and even more so in 2012. And yet he still got over 50%. That scared white folk to death. Not all of them, but many of them, a majority of them. And the electorate, the numbers showed it. He got 43% in 2008. And they said, okay, yeah, well, good, you did 4 years, so we'll show we aren't prejudiced because we elected a black man. I haven't voted for you. But in 2012, only 39% of white America voted for Obama. He still got over 50% of the vote, which is something that Donald Trump would never, ever do. And that scared them to death. That's why they said we got to take America back and we got to make America great again. They're talking about going back to the 1930s. And so we have to understand what that mental thought process is, that no matter which technique you use, we're going to try to attach it to race, and then so we can keep poor whites from attempting to wake up and see what's going on. She talked about rural farmers and stuff. At that during that battle, she was talking about going. That was during the 1880s and 1890s, during the populist movement, and William Jennings Bryan and others. And there was a Colored Farmers Alliance that was formed in the South, mostly, along with the White Farmers Alliance. And they were on the verge of unifying and putting together a powerful coalition. And one thing that broke it up is the Southern white politicians found out about that, and they started preaching and going to these rallies and preaching the nigger word and everything else to separate them. And the White Farmers Alliance, they left. And what they did, they also started giving them federal loans and stuff that they didn't give to black farmers. And so those things broke it up. It was the Southern strategy. Earl, it was the Southern strategy.
You know, Professor Harvey, as you see this, and again, you and I have been around a little while, and you see the nationalism that is taking place. These armed people who clearly do not mean our government any good, who clearly are a major threat to our democracy. I don't care what anybody says. You can't tell me that these armed people are a good thing for the democracy of the United States. I don't care what color you are.
Errol, not only that, but what party you belong to. If you disagree with them in any kind of way, now look at that Josh Hawley. Now that fool would walk across the mall area, giving a clenched fist to the mob, urging them on, and then they show that cowardly bastard you know, running through the halls of Congress, running, trying to hide when they broke into the Capitol. You know, and Mike Pence and the Secret Service running for their lives. As were some of the others. So, you know, except for a few couple of brave Republicans, the rest of them ran and hid too. You know, and my thing is, and it shook Liz Cheney to her foundation. Remember, every time they voted for and with Donald Trump on anything, they were emboldening a very ignorant and very dangerous man who was a wannabe dictator. And, you know, I'm telling you right now, you know, when you get a people who are so blind that they're willing to vote against their own self-interest, it tells you that they have become desensitized.
Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. It's 844-967-2789. Text us at that same number. My guest is still Professor Bob Harvey, all the way from Charlotte, North Carolina, with a, you know, just class has been really great today, Professor Harvey. Let me ask you, what happens if let's say, the Republicans and get everything that they want, and they wind up with the House, the Senate? Clearly they can't do the real damage that they want to do, because the same thing that Democrats have been faced with a filibuster, and President Joe Biden, who will be able to check some of those things. But let's say, you know, the Republicans go ahead, win the Senate, the House, and then 2 years from now, win the presidency. Paint us a picture of what this nation is going to look like.
Well, we've been through before, starting with Newt Gingrich. We remember in 1995 with the contract with America, and Newt Gingrich them started. He set that pattern up, and that pretty much began with the 104th Congress from 1995 to 1997, and Newt Gingrich, you know, got in there and he became Speaker of the House, and twice during that time period, and then of course in 1996, it shut the government down. Remember Donald Trump, when he got in there and the Democrats finally gained control, he shut the government down for 31 to 32 days, the longest it's ever been shut down. Republicans, John Boehner did it twice. So that's what they do. You're going to see probably a shutdown of the government led by the Republicans, because they got both houses. They'll, even if they go out and got one house, they can shut the government down, and they can force the other houses, the other house, and the president to come to terms, to come to grips with it, because they got a mandate. If we're in power, you sit back quietly, and if you can't do anything, don't do anything. Just don't get in the way. Let the president do what the hell he wants to do. That's what they did with Donald Trump, and he got he ended up getting $8 trillion worth of debt in 4 years. They let Bush run rampant wild. He started two wars. One in Iraq, and the other in Afghanistan. So, you know, let them run. Let them do it as long as they're in power. But once you don't get the House, the White House, then you automatically, and you gain control of the House or the Senate, then you automatically start making life difficult for the other side. Skin them up as bad as you can. And I will tell you right now what I'm already seeing in the weeds as I look around at the news media, because I watch all of them, Fox and Newsmax, I watch all of them. And I can tell you right now that they already started to go after Kamala Harris, just in case, you know, and you never seen it before, you just go after the vice president. But they're going after her because they realize that if something happens to Biden, they have already set the stage to ruffle up. And they got the playbook, because that's what they did with Hillary Clinton. They roughed her up so bad that she lost. Of course, she made some mistakes too, but she lost. So that's what they have to do. Donald Trump, it's going to be interesting to see what's going to happen, but I guarantee you the Republicans, if they gain control of either house, they're going after Garland and the Justice Department.
Impeaching Biden.
They want him, baby. They can impeach him.
I know, but that's what they want to do. Right.
That's what they want. That's what a couple of the crazies want to do. But and if they do that, then what they'll do is they're gonna impeach him. But they got to be very careful. They don't rough him up too bad because he's the elderly white man, and they got to be very careful about that. Their most loyal subjects are white men. That's why it's been so difficult to try to attack him. They've been attacking him. They're looking old, but that job ages you anyway. You know, so they got to be very careful about that because the white man. But they will. They're going to go after Kamala Harris. They're going after the guy in charge of the FBI. And then they're going after Garland. They got to go after those three. You know, they got to be very careful. They can't skin up Jackson in the Supreme Court. But they're going to try to figure out some kind of way to talk bad about her, pay close attention to her responses and her her certain responses on the Supreme Court, and her briefs. They're going to be looking at them carefully, and they're going to continue to try to pack the courts, especially in the Senate, because the Senate is the one that consents and confirms. They're going to make sure that they go ahead and they continue to pack the courts as that strategy has shown to work with Mitch McConnell. So that's what they're going to do. That is what they're going to do. It's going to be gridlock.
But Professor Harvey, none of that impacts the average person who is struggling right now, who, as our nation is going to be headed towards recession, none of that helps them, and they're going to be needing help. I didn't hear you point out anything that's going to make life better for the average.
The history of bigotry and blindness shows that for poor people and people who are in need of things, every little bit helps. At least they won. They took back the House, and they made life rough for a Democrat in the White House. They took back the House, and they took back the Senate. What did John Boehner say when Barack Obama was in?
One term.
You know, I tell you, it's a wonderful thing because he's just a gift that keeps on giving. While Obama was in office in 8 years, the Democrats lost 1,000 seats at the state and federal level, 1,000 seats. House, Senate at the state level, governor's office, and solicitor general, whatever other offices he got that were elected. And then they lost the Congress. So, to them, that was a victory. To them, that was a victory. And that's why I say that Obama was a fantastic president based upon what he had to put up with.
Hey, Professor Harvey, we got to run, man. Thank you. That's why history should never be done away with.
They try. That's why they're trying their best to do it. Everything else.
We got to run, Professor Harvey. Thank you very much for the call. Tom, I'm sorry it got too late. I'll be back. We've got to go to a break. When we come back, we'll be joined by Dr. Robert Craig, Executive Director of Citizen Action. We'll be right back.